You're listening to the Isaka Podcast. I'm your host, Abby Norton, and today's episode is sponsored by Vanguard Integrity Professionals. Today I'm speaking with Brian Marshall, President at Vanguard, and Milt Rosberg, Vice President. Thank you both for joining me.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
So you recently hosted a webinar titled Why the Calls for Zero Trust, where you talked about how organizations today face a lot of pressure to meet compliance requirements, which has resulted in a push to using a zero trust approach. In your webinar, you talked about the importance of getting buy-in from the entire organization. What is the best approach for talking to C-suite leadership about the importance of zero trust?
All right, so I'll take this one, Milt, if you don't mind. First of all, zero trust is a paradigm shift in how people view security. And so one of the things you need to communicate back to your management or within the organization is that zero trust can actually automate a lot of the different data protections and governance requirements required of your organization from different geographic locations, whether it's GDPR, the California GDPR requirement, or data privacy requirements. Basically, zero trust can aid in the process of achieving compliance with governance regulations and has the significant added benefit of ensuring better security for, especially for transactional type activities within your environment. So the reality is that when it comes to approaching the C-suite leadership of zero trust, explain to them the fact that zero trust will aid the organization in achieving better security while providing cost savings in the long run. Milt, you want to add to that?
Yeah, the biggest concern when we meet with C-level members of organizations is that they want to make sure that they don't end up in the front page of a popular magazine or newspaper article. So this is a way, it's a paradigm shift to make sure that the people are actually connecting to the system and looking at data are the proper people to do it. So it's an idea where the organization has to pull together as a team and say, you know what, we really don't trust anybody. You want to make sure that all the connections are correct, all the people that are looking at data are the right people, and we want to do everything we can as an organization to remove excess access.
And I'm going to add a couple more things here. First of all, understanding that one of the tenets of zero trust is the idea that individual access to enterprise resources is granted on a per session basis. So one of the ideas in zero trust is just because I trusted you last time doesn't mean I trust you this time. I have to revalidate and re-verify that you're a trustworthy person or transaction or resource, and that you're coming from a location that hasn't increased the risk that you are now providing an attack vector. An example of one of the ways that zero trust can help an organization save money is this. Lots of countries around the world are working on data protection and data privacy. And one of the biggest problems of data protection and data privacy are responsible for the proliferation of data inside and outside the organization. For example, let's say you've got an individual within a bank or a healthcare institution, and they've got information that they need to send out either within the organization or outside the organization. One of the things that zero trust can do for us is a good zero trust program allows you to mark the data that you're sending with a sensitivity label. And so if somebody has information about my healthcare or my finance and they go to send an email or transfer the data, a zero trust architecture can look at that data before it leaves the organization, realize that the data contained within has privacy or financial data or information contained within, and either refuse to send it out, ensure that it gets categorized properly, or send it out, categorize it, but also ensure that it's encrypted so that nobody else can peer into that data. So zero trust, one of the great things that you want to communicate to your management is that a good zero trust architecture will help avoid data loss and help you avoid violating the principles of data protection and privacy rights of individuals by automating the process of ensuring the integrity, secrecy, encryption, and classification of the data inside and outside your organization.
For the executive level to start looking at this, is that they most likely have had some kind of pen testing or vulnerability scan on their system, and they've left these notices that things are open. They've left them open for years, and they should get them closed. And I think those are the places, the vectors, that the bad guys are going to look at to get in. Plus, those are the vectors that the people are going to look at that are in the organization. They're going to know that they have these open places where they are a trusted resource and zero trust has not been implemented.
One of your webinar attendees wrote in saying that they had been making efforts with one of their vendors to raise awareness about zero trust. Can you talk at all about the importance of zero trust from a vendor perspective?
So we have customers who rely on us, rely on our software and services to provide that we provide to them. And because of that, they'll come to us, these large financial institutions, government agencies, healthcare companies, airlines, et cetera. They're one of their biggest concerns always is, what risk are my vendors bringing into my organization? And so from one side as a vendor, just from the side of we sell our products and software and products and services to customers, is we have to, on a periodic, at least annual basis, sometimes more than once or twice a year, we have to either show to our customers, prove to our customers, or through an audit conducted by ourselves or by our customers, show them that we're secure. And one of the ways we do that is by implementing zero trust architecture, the zero trust framework, and proving to our customers that if and when they transfer us data, they connect to us, we connect to them, they grab our software off of one of our sites during our development process of our software ourselves, that we have taken every step to ensure the integrity of the platforms and resources and software that we provide to that customer. So just from the side of us as a business ourselves, we have to worry about it. But then from the side of the customer, where we are interested in helping them implement, zero trust is important to us as well, because it really, the tenets of zero trust go to the heart of security. There are seven tenets of zero trust. One of them is all communication is secured regardless of the network location. It seems pretty simple and straightforward, but it's a requirement that all communication be secured. And when we go out and we do audits, computer security audits for our customers, when we do pen testing, when we do assessments, some of the things that we look at are right at the heart of the zero trust architecture itself. So from both sides of that perspective, zero trust is highly important.
Well, Brian, you, prior to being president of the company, you ran the R&D for 12, 13 years. Mm-hmm. And you frequently talk about using layers within the development so that we can protect the product that we're developing or something special for a client or special code. We get a lot of requests for special code, right, because they have unique needs on their ZOS environment. Could you talk just a little bit about how that's so important for a development shop?
Well, it's important for all shops. And this, again, goes to the heart of zero trust architecture and the paradigm that is zero trust. And that is, trust nobody, verify everybody, defense in depth, and segment off your networks. So, for example, here at Vanguard, all of our software is developed inside of a secure network, and that secure network has limited or really zero access to the outside world. And the reason we do that is that during the development process of security software, the worst thing that can happen is that a individual decides to insert code into your software that gives them a backdoor to customer. Okay. So layers of security, defense in depth, All of those are important and have to be implemented along with software signing and other things to ensure that when your software actually gets out into the real world, has gone through all of its testing, that there's no back door that allows somebody to get in and cause harm to a customer.
So do you think there should be a difference between an on-premises zero trust approach versus using zero trust with the cloud?
The reality is when people ask a question like, should there be a difference between an on-prem zero trust and a cloud zero trust, what they're really asking you is this. Should you be more suspect of the transactions and resources that occur in the cloud versus trusting what happens within your network more? And the answer to that question should always be no. You should trust nobody all the time. You should continually believe that the, and this is one of the tenets, if you will, or I don't know if it's one of the actual tenets, but it's one of the founding principles, is a better word, of zero trust. And that is this. Don't ever believe that your network is secure. Always believe that you've been penetrated and act accordingly. We have to realize that we need to defend everything, assume right away that there are people within your network, and therefore you shouldn't trust your own network more or less than any other network, because you shouldn't trust any premise, any network, any resource. Continuous vigilance, continuous validation, continuous risk approach, a risk approach to deciding whether or not a transaction or a resource should be and can be trusted, and do it continuously.
Organizations that we work with, we want to do a pen testing, a vulnerability scan, where we find various ways that we can take control of their system within a short period of time. And so not only is it people on the outside, it's people on the inside. I think some of the biggest exfiltrations of data have been from people working in the organization. There was some guy named Snowden, who I think had an awful lot of information from NSA, who was cleared.
Yeah.
So it can be, I think, 35 to 40% of the data that's exfiltrated is coming from the inside attack.
And it may be a lot more than that,
and
right?
It could be, because they don't want to report it. You find a lot of organizations that they don't want to say, you know, we haven't done the right things internally in order to build the trusted organization we have. I mean, as a supplier of security software, audit and compliance, very seldom do we ever get a phone call from somebody that says, guess what, our security is really, really bad, and we need your help. And because nobody ever wants to admit that they have bad security. So if you have an event that happens inside an organization, it's a result because the things aren't set correctly and they haven't really adopted zero trust internally.
So on a related note, often employees will move to a different position or department within an organization, but their access and permissions fail to be updated. These transfers usually take place quickly, and managers might not know what permissions the new position should have. Sometimes HR doesn't feel it's their job to correct these permissions. Do you have any recommendations for how to address this issue?
I mean, first and foremost, role-based access control. As people move within your organization, make sure that there's a defined role with entitlements that match that user, that matches their job function, so that as they move around, their entitlements are changed. On top of that, things like SOCs, which require recertification of access on an annual or biannual basis, use of automated products and tools that track actual usage of entitlements and when an entitlement is or is not used by a particular individual or a group of individuals. So first of all, those things plus automation. You can automate the ability for an organization to track the resources and transactions that are accessed by an individual or by an ID, and use that to be able to tell whether or not a set of entitlements are no longer required simply because that job function doesn't require it anymore, or because that individual's moved into a different job function and nobody thought about removing that. So compare actual completed access with the entitlements allowed on a continuous ongoing basis and remove those entitlements that are no longer necessary for an individual.
And interestingly, Brian, when we work with organizations, they'll come to us and say, you know, our internal auditors or external auditors are saying, you know what, we need to do something about this because we have access from people that have left 10, 15 years ago, and we need to clean this up. We have 12,000 or to 8,000, I mean, huge numbers within these organizations that need to be cleaned up. And we work with them to try to resolve that problem. But they typically end up to be a very severe audit finding under the title of excess access and how can you get better control of this.
Right. Absolutely.
Founded in 1986 to help customers safeguard mission-critical applications and data, Vanguard Integrity Professionals is the largest independent provider of enterprise ZOS security software for addressing complex security and regulatory compliance challenges. Led by some of the most knowledgeable minds in the cybersecurity industry, Vanguard continuously drives innovation in security software and technology to stay ahead of evolving regulatory requirements and an ever-changing threatscape. In addition to engineering ZOS security software, Vanguard proudly offers year-round training programs to provide comprehensive education for IT security professionals, as well as professional services that includes managed services, penetration testing, and vulnerability scans. The world's largest financial, insurance, government, and retail organizations entrust their security to Vanguard Integrity Professionals. When it comes to privileged access, it can be very difficult to monitor employee activity as it requires going through highly detailed logs, which can be cumbersome. How can management be convinced that it's still important to do this for company security?
It is executive management who has a fiduciary responsibility for following the requirements of compliance guidelines. And almost every compliance guideline I've read, all of them put it the onus upon management to go through and review activity logs of users on an ongoing basis to look for suspicious activity, to review violations, and to respond to them and act accordingly. So first and foremost, I'd ask executive management, do you like your job? Because you're the one that's going to lose it if you don't do this. The next thing I'd add is this. There are a lot of automated tools, SIMs and things like that, that can be used to aid with this. Zero Trust, going back to Zero Trust, one of the things about Zero Trust is that you don't throw your existing solutions out of the organization, go out and buy a brand new one. You use the existing solutions you have in place. You just use them in a more automated and architectural fashion. In other words, everything's going to blend together and work together. A SIM is one of them, and a SIM is a great way to take all of the logs from all your disparate systems, send them down to a single place for aggregation and correlation to look for those records that indicate a problem has or is occurring.
And we work with organizations, and they'll ask us to do an analysis of tools that they bought from Vanguard and other companies to see if they've implemented them correctly or used them to 100%. And it's interestingly, let's say you're a Microsoft user, you may only be using an Excel spreadsheet in the mail, but it has all this other capability. So it's important for organizations to really understand, have they leveraged the products and tools that they bought? Are they getting the proper training? Are they educating the people? And the people that are using those, are those the right people to do it? Doing a match between the requirement and the human resource that's doing it.
And I'd go back, the one other thing I'd say to management is this. Learn from the mistakes of others, other large organizations. Going back to the Target breach around 2013,
yep.
They had a SIM in-house that alerted them to the fact that they had data leaving their organization. happened to them. Their SIM alerted them twice, and their security operations center, which I believe was in India at the time, actually saw that, noticed it, and notified people in the United States that there was a potential problem. But they ignored it. And if you go back and look at how much money that breach ended up costing Target, the retailer, because they ignored their own internal products that were telling them that there was a problem and that those products were evaluating the logs. I would use those as examples to my management and say, hey, listen, do you want to be Target? Do you want you're the guy that's responsible for running the organization. The president of Target, the CEO, he lost his job. Do you want to be him?
You know, it's interesting, Brian, all these regulations that are passed, you know, like SOX, GDPR, PCI, all the other regulations, they're put in place because organizationally these companies and entities, including the federal government and state governments, haven't deployed all the capabilities that they can in order to protect the data. So they put the teeth in it.
Right.
Like you take a look at this 23NYC500 thing, that's teeth. Down to the place where they say you need to have a chief information security officer.
Yeah.
Well, why'd they do that? Because they want to make sure that you have a person that has a global view of the requirement of that organization. And you want to have somebody that's looking at the protection of the organization versus somebody inside that maybe is trying to ride the political thing, saying, I only have 2 more years till I retire.
Yeah.
And I don't want to do anything into security because I'm going to retire in 2 years. And I don't want to raise any awareness.
Right.
And so that's all part of the same trend of making sure that you have the right people doing the right thing and you have the zero trust concept where I don't trust anybody for anything.
Right.
And that's really the paradigm shift that you were speaking about in the beginning. And that's a discussion that needs to happen openly without penalty. And we've had cases where we'll go to an organization and make a recommendation. They'll say, we really don't want to know all those things.
Right.
Right. I mean,
I sat down with a CTO of a large retailer,
yep,
and I had offered to sit down and do an assessment on some of the systems. And he bluntly said to me, he said, Brian, I'm better off not knowing and having the problem,
right,
than knowing and having the problem.
Right.
So thanks, but no thanks. If you do this assessment for me, even if I don't pay you for the assessment, I'm going to spend a lot of money fixing the problems you found.
Right.
And it's an endemic problem within all organizations. And I always tell people, take a risk-based approach to security. And that is this. Start with the data or the information people are most interested in first, because it's financial information, it's HIPAA information, it's information that you don't want to get out, and secure it first and wall it off from everything else. Again, going back to zero trust, I segment things apart within my network, within my resources, that I also go ahead and take a risk-based approach to evaluating the access or the transaction that's going to or attempting to occur. And that I do that on a per session basis, and that I do it on a continuous daily basis, so that if today Milt Rosberg is coming in and attempting to transfer money and he's in Henderson, Nevada, and he's logging into his bank account and requesting $30,000 to somebody else's bank account, I'm going to evaluate that on all pieces of data and information that are available to me, including your location. And I'll say, yes, today I'm going to allow that transaction. If a week from now, Milt logs back in through the same on the same computer, or let's say you think it's the same computer, and he comes in, but this time his location is Beijing, I may, even though he's provided all the correct credentials, even though he's requesting the same amount of money, $300, to be transferred from his account to somewhere else, I may deny it now, because you've changed the risk factor of that transaction by changing your location from Henderson, Nevada to Beijing.
You know, it's with this idea of getting corporate attention to apply the revenue that you need to look at these kind of products, whether they be consulting revenue, training revenue, maybe some new products. In some cases, we'll actually go in and talk about compliance with an organization, and we'll run a compliance scan, and it'll come up with all these things that need to be repaired. And they'll say, I don't want to start working on that, because if I have to close all those gaps that the audit department says I need to close, I could be working on those for 2 years because they're so serious.
Yeah.
Because of the platforms we work on. We work on these very large ZOS platforms that have been sometimes neglected for 8, 10, 12 years, and they have a lot of excess access. They have people shouldn't be looking at things. And so raising awareness to management, it has to get past the political space and get into the place where you really want to take care of it, and you don't trust anybody looking at any of that data.
Correct.
All right. So my final question for you, can you speak to the role that financial gain or the hope of it plays in the event of increased internal threat?
The reality is, outside of nation state hackers and ethical hackers and, you know, the young hackers that are just getting going and just want to hack for fun, the biggest reason to hack is financial gain. And insider threats, the folks that know the most about your organization, are the ones that are going to be able to use that knowledge to penetrate your organization, exfiltrate data, and then have a windfall of money. And this happens time and time again in the financial industry. It's happened for hundreds of years. Even before we had computers, people would penetrate the bank one way or another, either inside or out, like, you know, think of an armored truck.
Right.
When there's an armored truck heist, usually they have an inside guy. Now just change an armored truck to some computer bits and understand it's probably some guy who's got a strong knowledge of the security of the organization that has the highest capability of stealing millions, if not billions of dollars from your organization, and then evaluate that as a risk and realize that at some point, the risk versus the reward for that individual is going to become too tempting. The financial gain and the thrill of doing it are going to overwhelm that person. And so you need to protect yourself from that.
It's interesting you bring that up from a financial aspect, also from a government aspect. I think it was Boeing Aircraft, where there's some guy from China that was working at Boeing Aircraft. He was a scientist, and he'd been stealing all kinds of plans for planes and jets and all that kind of stuff for years. And they went to his house and they uncovered all the stuff that he had stole for years and sending it over to China.
It happened to Tesla recently here in Nevada.
Right.
Yeah, one of the engineers, there was, I believe it was either a Russian or a Chinese.
It was a Russian.
Yeah. That was trying to convince one of the Tesla engineers to simply add some modifications to the Tesla's automated driving system so that once it rolled into production, he could use that as a way to basically convince Tesla to pay him a small ransom of money to remove it.
I think the amount that he was going to pay the engineer was like $1 million.
It wasn't cheap.
It wasn't cheap. So I'm sure that the ransom that the Russian person would have done to Tesla would have been much grander than that.
Yeah. So the internal threat can start as an external threat as well. And right. The reality is that financial gain is a huge motive.
Do you have any final thoughts for our listeners about how Vanguard Integrity Professionals can help them with zero trust?
One of the exciting things I see coming down the pike is privileged access management and monitoring. Where we're implementing a sort of a zero trust approach to access entitlement and tracking of activities by users. So this kind of goes back to your question about reviewing of logs and why it's so important. We've got a product that's coming out probably January, maybe February of next year, that's actually going to go through and on an automated basis and a learning basis learn about the activities of users on the ZOS platform, look for anomalies, look for attempted and or modifications to internal security, internal configuration, and then report on it and raise awareness to management. Hey, by the way, this individual over here is doing something. We should start tracking them. And then ultimately, once we get them all the monitoring in place, we're going to add the management of that so that it can proactively shut down those individuals, which is relatively easy to do. For some reason, customers are very hesitant on the ZOS platform to implement automated management of privileged access. In other words, I see a user coming in from a unknown location. They attempt to make a change to security or configuration or access some data. We can just kick them off the system right there. They're always hesitant to do that last step of kick them off the system and cancel their user ID and revoke them so they can't get back in. But that's one of the new exciting products we have coming out, as well as some other things. Mel, you want to talk about something?
Yeah, we're having a big push with our clients to look at compliance controls. We're doing roughly 1,600 compliance control checks, and we have very large organizations that are implementing this worldwide, you know, with big systems over 50, 60, 70, 80 LPARs. And we're able to gather that information in a few minutes, run the checks on all the systems. Doesn't make any difference what kind of security manager they're using. Bring that data back to a gold LPAR or the home office, and we'll make the information available through a web application that's encrypted. So that's a big push that we're seeing, where the organizations all the way up to the board of directors want to make sure that they're meeting all the requirements for each individual country, their industry requirements, and their requirements to their customer base. And it's all back to making sure that the people who have access, that are looking at the information, are the right people, and they're closing the gaps in the system. And it's a big trend, and we're having a lot of fun helping our clients. Well, the other thing I just want to mention, Brian, is there seems to be a push on, I know you've been addressing this, on this whole idea of putting encryption on systems.
Ah, pervasive encryption.
Encryption. We've had a lot of requests from clients to do that. And
we are working on, and it's in the early stages of an automated process to help ZOS customers with pervasive encryption across all three ESMs, absolutely.
Okay. That's a big push for, we're getting a lot of requests for that. Those seem to be the current trends right now, but we're keeping our ear to the ground and trying to do everything we can to keep our clients safe with security and very, very secure. We take it very personal. We want to make sure that we're, as a vendor, making sure we're doing everything we can to keep our clients safe from a secure point of view.
That's all the time we have on this episode of the podcast. Thank you again to our sponsor, Vanguard Integrity Professionals. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.